This is Dr. Holly Lucille's Mindful Medicine. Here's Dr. Holly Lucille.
Hi, folks. Thanks so much for being here. I'm so excited about today's show on Mindful Medicine. I am Dr. Holly Lucille, and I am looking at one of the most lovely book covers I've ever seen. The book is called Every Body Yoga. It's by Jessamyn Stanley. She is my guest. We are going to be talking to her about letting go of fear, getting on the mat, and loving your body. Jessamyn, welcome to the show.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, I am so happy that you're here. And so in honor of you today, I want you to know this. I am one of those people that I have been trying to break this habit for, I would say, a good decade consciously, that loves to get into a workout, full metal jacket, and then back of the hand, got to go do my day. And at 51 years old, I end up creaking out of my chair and not being able to like sit down and go to the bathroom, and I'm in pain. And so I do understand, I think, the science of yoga, but we're going to be talking more with you. But I have resistance to getting on the mat. I do. And so today I thought, you know
what?
And I try every day. Today I was like, I am going to at least show up on the mat in spirit of Jessamyn, because I knew you're going to be here. You're an internationally recognized yoga teacher. I know. Your Instagram is absolutely amazing.
I do yoga from a distance.
Yes, you did. And your book is absolutely amazing. So just talk to me a little bit about your history. How did you get into yoga? And I know that you're a body positive advocate. And your Instagram, like I said, page is absolutely amazing. You folks have got to check it out. My name is Jessamyn, and that's spelled Jessamyn. How'd you get into this?
You know, it's so funny when you say that my Instagram is awesome, or whatever very nice words you just used. I never think of it that way. To me, it's just a journal of the last few years of my life. It's just a journal of my practice. And I think that's a pretty important thing to note about the way that I've viewed all of this from the beginning, is that I have always just been trying to do my yoga practice, just trying to get onto the mat myself. You know, I still have those days of being like, oh man, do I really have to practice today? Is this a thing that has to happen? And having that battle with myself and having that in front of other people has ended up being accidentally transformational for a lot of people. And I don't think that my yoga practice, the reasons that I began are that different from anyone else. I was going through a period of depression, and I was in graduate school, and I just sort of gradually cottoned on to something that really became more than just an exercise program to do a couple times a week. It turned into the balm of my soul in so many different ways. Did that answer your question? I know that was kind of
of course it does. It and then some. Because and I want to ask you a little bit. Your answer sort of led me to another question, because the way that you say it, it's almost like you don't even think about it. Because it's not like you're telling me that you have a exercise program. It's that you have a yoga practice. Can you tell me a little bit more about what that means to you? Because I think there's a very subtle difference between that and somebody who, quote unquote, just does yoga or goes to yoga class for exercise. What is 100%, the whole practice thing?
100%. Yeah. Yeah, so I think that when you go to class, you know, like once or twice a week, and you're really more concerned with the culture of yoga in terms of like, you know, having the right mat, having the right leggings, having like, you know, and then getting a sweat from it and really feeling your body open up. These are all awesome reasons. I love coconut water. I love yoga leggings. I'm not shaming of that, but the reality of it is that the lessons that you learn on your mat eventually should translate to the moments when you're off the mat as well, because it's not, this whole life isn't about the way that we look to other people. It's not about, it is about, and then people think that when you step away from the physical benefits that you're like, oh, do you not care about health? It's like, no, this is, you're still taking care of your health, but you're actually thinking of it in a much larger view as well. You're tapping into the pieces of yourself that need to be taken care of that you don't even know. And there's a very distinct difference between that just showing up for class, you know, once or twice a week. And I don't think that it's hard to begin this practice, though. Like, it's not something that is so excuse me, so far off that the everyday person can't do it. And I think that's really what everybody yoga shows, is that you can just start from where you are today, accept who you are today, love yourself, find a way to step into that space, and you can start to really accept the practice that is a lot more than just exercise.
No, and that's what, I mean, I think it, you're just, is that, that is you on the front of your book, isn't
that
it?
That is me on the cover.
It's somebody
asked me that recently, and I was like, I kind of wish that it wasn't now, that I could be like, no, we just fixed someone. No, that's me. That's all thousand times no that more, I did that post.
No more, there's no more anonymity for you.
Exactly.
I think this is, when you're talking about sort of the right mat and the right leg, and saying, look, I live here in Los Angeles, right? And yoga is supposed to, well, it intimates this sort of deeper spiritual, sort of soft kind of, you know, just, but I see people fighting out in their big Yukon forerunners for parking spaces, you know, to run into the yoga class. Oh, and there's like, there's such a dichotomy. But, you know, when we talk about studios,
shoving people out of the way for the kombucha.
For the kombucha, you know, like, no, my mat goes there. Yeah. And it's like, come on.
But
as you said, for all, accept yourself for all bodies. For, I mean, you have a suggestion in your questions, and for bigger bodied student, where there are a few yoga studios around, and people are just getting started. What is your advice, for people of any size, of any body structure, of any look, you know, of any culture? You know, like I said, I live here in Los Angeles, and what I see, I mean, I it's just nothing surprises me.
You're in the belly
anymore.
Of the beast. I mean, especially, but when you think about yoga, particularly using a place like Los Angeles as for example, also San Francisco, New York, Seattle, where it's very much like, you know, there's one kind of person that you see doing it. And if you don't fit into that image, and even for a lot of people who do somehow, they do look that way. And there's so many people who feel like they're left out. And I think that that creates a fear factor where you feel like you don't even deserve to be in the room. You don't even deserve to show up to pay your $15 or whatever. So that is probably the hardest part to conquer and the first thing that needs to be conquered. You can't be thinking about, you know, do I know enough to do this? Do I know enough about yoga? Do I know enough about the postures? You don't know anything about the postures. You don't know anything about yoga. You're not expected to know that. That's not something that you should be concerned about. What you should be concerned about is the fact that you're afraid of other people. This is a larger concern. And that's something that I've had to really face up to in my own life. And it's not the kind of thing that you just are over in one day. It's the sort of thing, or one time, sort of thing that you have to repeat constantly. But excuse me, I think that what I noticed a lot from people who feel like they're not being accepted is there's a tendency to not take the place of what can I control? You know, it's more on the person who you appear. You know what? Let me not go that far. I'm saying more than I would like to. But
no, I love it. And what you were saying, you know, when you're afraid of other people, here's my take on it. And let me know if you agree, because I go through this myself. I feel like it's my own darn, because I try to be gentle with it, because I think we all have them. It's my own darn projections of other people, right? So I don't know these people. I'm sizing them up. I'm looking them up and down. I'm probably one of those, the most gentle, loving people that I know. I mean, I hope so. But still,
totally.
I have the defenses of my projection, because I think Pema Chodron said that's pretty much, or it was a quote from one of her books that said, we have more projections than there are dust motes in a sunbeam. Because it's all we have,
never
right?
Never has there been a truer statement. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And so I try to manage my own fear of other people by understanding what I'm projecting on them, because it's pretty much a blank slate, especially if you don't know anybody, right? And you're just kind of there.
Exactly.
So I try to get, because that's what it's like. It gets so crazy, especially in the fitness culture. I think that is sort of all across this nation, where there's new classes and new styles of yoga popping up all over the place and people trying to get in. It can be extremely intimidating, but I think you have to go in there with your own chops and really have the practice of focusing on yourself so you can really take care of yourself.
Exactly. And then noticing how whenever you feel, and this is something that I've had to notice over time, that really the people who want to conform and the people who maybe they are giving you mean looks, maybe they are trying to make you feel bad, or that is their projection. That's their self-hate. That's what they're dealing with. And it's very easy for us to just take whatever people are throwing at us at face value. But once you start to see that really any negativity that you receive from another human being is them projecting their own self-hate onto you, then you can say, maybe I don't even want to be involved in that. And then in the yoga context, you're like, I'm just going to do my yoga over here while you have your whole internal hatred projecting onto other people thing. You can have that. Right. I'm going to do my yoga. And it's hard to get to that place, though. Like, I don't want to trivialize it and make it sound like, oh, yeah, just get here and it'll be gravy train. You know, it's hard, but that's the path. The path is not obsessing over the fact that thin people who hate fat people will be staring at fat people, because that's just a part of life. That's just what's going to happen. Can't work
I understand. And I always love when my unconscious or my subconscious gets completely schooled by, you know, my own insecurities, and my thoughts are just running amok without me even thinking about it. And I'm like, Holly, what are you doing? And then, you know, somebody just like whips my butt at something, you know, or it's a constant sort of practice of being aware of our own thoughts, of our own minds. Because I think it's a busy world that we live in. And as you say, I'm going to go do my yoga over here. With your book, Everybody Yoga, you have such great illustrations and such great information on basic poses. I mean, it's just delicious. And what do you say for somebody who thinks they haven't done a pose ever. They're sort of intimidated by yoga. Their body may be too weak to practice poses as they've seen on, you know, the billboard or in commercials or what have you. And they just feel like they're going to fall in a heap on the floor. What's your suggestion?
You know, motivation is not going to be there all the time, and you can't rely on it. And what you can say to yourself is that I want to feel good. And then if you can start feeling good by practicing yoga, if it cottons to you, some people, you know, not everybody loves yoga, but I think there are many, many people who do. And once you start to feel just that good feeling within yourself where your muscles are stretching out and you're relaxing your shoulders back more and your head is sitting up tall and you're taller, you are physically taller. When you start to feel and see those effects, it's very easy to say, I would like to continue to feel this way. I don't want to be, it's not the same as saying like, well, I have to work out because if I don't work out, I'm going to be a size X, and I don't want to be a size X. I want to be a size Y, and I'm obsessed with being X or Y, X or Y. It's not about that. It's saying I want to feel good. So that's my main thing about tackling motivation, is start to look at the source of your motivation and fix that. But then on top of that, if it's going to be fickle, and I can still tell you to this day that there are days when I wake up and I'm like, oh man, I do not feel like getting on my yoga mat. I feel like getting 20 doubles, like donuts, that would be nice. You know what I mean? So it's like, there are definitely days where you're like, I don't want to do this. And the best way to force it is to just roll the mat out. And this is where it's helpful to build a home practice. And that's why so much of Everybody Yoga is about building a home practice. Because even if maybe you go to a great class every week and you love it, there is going to be a day where you don't want to go to that class. And I promise it happens to the teacher of that class. So it's like, when you have that day, you need to still have something that you can come back to. Even if it's just you sitting on your mat in Sukhasana, easy pose with your legs crossed and you breathing deeply, inhaling and exhaling with your eyes closed. That's probably the best kind of yoga that you can do it. Anyway, but if you focus on just getting on the mat, because once you get on the mat, you're not going to want to get off. And that's just the fact of it. Because if you can just tailor it to where you are right now, it's so fun.
Yeah, people listen to her, and it's true. I am living proof, because I, about a year ago, actually, just sort of finally, the accumulative effects of just honestly, not walking my talk and pushing too hard throughout my 15, 16 year career, had to stop doing the type of exercise I was doing. And I had to start initiating more parasympathetic sort of rest, relax, repair into my life. And yoga was one of those things that I turned to. Mm-hmm. And I've always been a, you
what
know,
kind of
sort
exercise
of a,
were you?
Oh, dear.
I'm, sorry, what kind of exercise were you doing before?
There's a little, you know, phenomenon called CrossFit. And I
yes,
was a competitive,
CrossFit.
I was a competitive master's athlete for 4 years.
Nice. Yeah, I just had my first CrossFit class last week, actually. That's awesome.
Well, not so nice when you don't mind.
Anyway.
Yeah. It's not so nice when you don't mind the rules of being over 50, which is modification, moderation, and mobility. And that's certainly where I could fault myself. But, you know, I was so surprised every time, and you say, let go of fear, get on the mat and love your body. I would have to just get on the mat so the fear could be let go and then finally start to love my body again. But I have to tell you, and I chose an online program just to get started, sort of a 30-day thing. And the amount of energy, just heat. Now I'm used to, you know, double unders and Olympic lifting and taking my body and flying it through the air with pull-ups and such. The amount of heat and fire that I could feel from the first 6 or 7 minutes of just going through. And this woman was, I loved her because she's like, hey, here's the rules. There are no rules. You know, she made it very, just like your book, very
right.
comfortable, allowing that home practice to be, personalized to whomever is doing it. And I have to tell you, there is not one time where I got on the mat and finished and didn't feel so much better. And I think that's that exactly what you said. If people can just remember, the motivation is going to wane, but if they can remember that they do want to feel better, then practicing and just knowing you can't hide and you don't need to, because that's the journey, right? Nothing's going to be perfect, but you just stay aware and you be curious. I just love it. This is awesome.
So, you know, 100% right. to what you were just saying, just to jump on the back of it.
Please. Yeah, good. That's good. So now how long, you know, you're an internationally recognized yoga teacher. When you're giving your one-on-ones, what do you suggest for folks as far as holding postures? I'll tell you, this morning I was in that lovely tree posture, and especially with balanced postures, you really can't hide there, right? Because I'm like, oh, I don't breathe. This is interesting. This is good to know, right? I don't breathe. But how long?
So good.
How long do people? Yeah. How long do people hold poses? What do you tell them?
I mean, I think that it just sort of depends on the person. It depends on the style of yoga that you're practicing. But in general, I think it's good to hold for at least 3 to 5 breaths so that you don't just hop out immediately after 1 to 2 breaths. You want to allow yourself to chill out. Because initially when you get into an asana, it's just like, especially if you're, you know, you're following the directions, you're trying to get in smoothly. And some people just want to hop into the shape and just hold it to prove that you can hold it. And then get out. And that's fine, I guess, if you would like to go that route. But I think it's better to try to challenge yourself a little bit and to say, okay, so you give yourself 3 breaths to just get into the posture. Just get here. Be cool with it. And then you have an extra 2 breaths to really luxuriate in the posture. And then you can keep holding after that. You know, turn this into 5 to 10 breaths, turn it into 10 to 20 breaths. It just kind of depends on the pose, the style, whatever. But whenever you just take and again with the style of yoga, like I teach vinyasa style yoga, which is bringing the breath and the motion together in a very dancey style. So there are many times of vinyasa flow where you might only hold each movement for 1 breath and then you come out and you're moving quickly from pose to pose, and that's what's helping you build it. But typically, part of the building the heat is maintaining the shape and really allowing the logs to just be settled on top and for all of that to really light up. And you have to give yourself a little bit of time for that to happen. But it really does. I mean, it just varies depending on the kind of practice.
But I think that the advice is so good, because I know that I've seen it certainly in people that I've done yoga with, and I also witness it in myself. I'm kind of a checker offer. I'm like, okay, did that? No, no. I'll go. Okay. Okay. So where's Savasana? Okay. I'm done. Like, okay, yoga done. Check that box. Go on. And I think that, one of the things that, I was talking about over the weekend with my mother-in-law was, this whole idea of the fact that there are so many things to connect us. I mean, you know, you and I are talking and you are currently where physically?
In North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. In North Carolina, and I'm here in Los Angeles. Yeah, and it's like we're having a conversation. There's so many ways that we're connected, but I think there are so many ways that we are disconnected from each other in a more intimate way. But I do think that starts with being disconnected from ourselves. And so if you can really get, I know for myself, into a yoga pose and not just, you know, check off the box and get into the other one until the sequence is done, you can get there. You can actually take time to connect with yourself. You know, I notice it all the time. Like even like, let's say I'm in my practice and I go out of the room to get a test kit or, you know, to maybe use the bathroom. I'll come back and my patient has gotten into their purse or, you know, their pocket and they've got their phone. Like just, we don't even spend time with our thoughts anymore. Absolutely. And yoga's such a great place to do that.
It is. But it's also a scary place for that exact reason.
Yeah.
And I think that what you're saying about wanting to hop in and out of the poses is very, very real because we live in such a jump cutty world where everything is just, you know, you can flip from one thing to the other. And when I first started practicing yoga, one of the reasons that I really gravitated towards the vinyasa flow is because it is that like moving from one idea to the other so that you don't get too caught up in one pose for a long time. And that's an excellent method for really getting introduced to the practice. And that's why I think it's a vinyasa flow is a perfect way to just get started with yoga because you don't have to obsess over, or you don't find your place. You don't find yourself sitting with things as much as you do in classes where you're holding the pose for, you know, quite a while, like maybe 5 to 10 breaths. That's, if you are maintaining a shape for that long, you have time to get over your initial fear of just getting into the shape. And then you have time to focus on some of the details of the posture. And then you have time to just breathe and sit with it. And that process of sitting with it is so scary. That's why whenever you see people go out to dinner, I feel like I very rarely see people eating dinner together where someone Mm-mm. is not on their phone. It's very, very sad because we're moving into this space of like, where you're not even communicating and connecting with the people who are right next to you. And that same thing comes into the yoga practice. And I feel like it's something that we have to be very mindful of as modern practitioners and really allowing ourselves the space to sit with things and to be in discomfort and to accept that that is a part of this life too.
I think it's such a great point, especially for practitioners, because I think it's good awareness to understand that, because I know the more that people are ingrained and habituated and their brain is sort of adapts to that constant stimulus of the next text, the next email, the next call, Absolutely. The next post, the next tweet, that it's going to take that much more time to break that sort of imbalance and get them back over to allowing, I mean, because it's a hit of dopamine at the end of the day, really, you're getting stimulus and to allow those cells to downregulate
over and over
and to break that cycle and to get into that breath. And so I think that's a great point that you make, especially, I mean, I've seen it in my practice harder and harder. I mean, you know, sometimes I think what I do, certainly medicine, not rocket science. I mean, diet, lifestyle, you know, things. But I do believe that that is the key when you're looking at changes and long-lasting changes is to understand where people are at from a psychosocial, emotional perspective in the present day. Because without that understanding, the great gifts that you have can't really be applied or adhered to by these lovely students because their brains are not ready to make those changes.
Exactly. And that is something that I think, you know, I find myself, I'm not really that concerned with how people accept the practice, you know, I mean, or like accept my interpretation of it because everything about this experience is so subjective that it's just like, you know, you come into it from the perspective that you're coming into it. You get whatever you're going to get, and that's the yoga of it. You know, that's your space to sit in with it. And it's a big gray area, and where you don't know how things are going to affect certain people, especially like, I mean, I don't think there's a way to expect that someone who has never known a life without the iPhone is and has like always has it up to their face. Like the kids now, they just, I mean, all day long with the phone. It's just like, I mean, I really can't even comprehend it. And I am also a product of the digital age, and I can't. Anyway, but so you can't expect this person who is like so ingrained in their phone to have the same mental openness to someone as someone who, you know, grew up hoping to have a typewriter one day. It's like, it's a very different kind of perspective. And I think it's just important that we all try to accept that we're on our own unique journeys and that you can say whatever you can to another person. And my thought as a teacher is that I just want to make space for people to have whatever experience they need to have without feeling as though there's judgment or without feeling compelled to act differently than who they actually are. And that, I think, is, it's just the only space to stay in with something that is, it's so subjective.
Yeah, well, that's a great point. And let's get people on the mat. Like I said, I think that you've inspired me once again just to get there. Get on the mat, let go of fear, love your body. Folks, the book is Everybody Yoga. The author is Jessamyn Stanley. You can find her at jessaminstanley.com, and I'm going to spell it for you. It's jessaminstanley.com, or on Twitter at Jess, not Jazz, and Facebook, my name is Jessamyn. Jessamyn, thanks so much. Folks, if you want an incredible yoga instructor who's going to get you on the mat and help you let go of fear and love your body no matter what it looks like, no matter how it feels, this is the woman to go to. I am Dr. Holly Lucille. This is Mindful Medicine. Thank you so much for joining us, and until next time.